This hour is brought to you by The Pint. Toronto's best St. Patrick's Day party is at The Pint. $5 Guinness, live music, dance floors, The Pint.
It's time to get brutally honest.
How deflating for your confidence would it be to be the group behind them?
And everybody and leaves?
Everyone just leaves. It's just a herd of people ahead of you, and they're never waiting for you to shoot.
Yeah, you immediately go to Tam O'Shanter.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Brian Hayes, Jonas Siegel from The Athletic, and Craig Button in here. Jason Sobel will join us from ESPN, senior golf writer. He was down at the Valspar Championship, and he's going to be at Bay Hill this upcoming weekend. Tiger, he's going to be at Bay Hill this upcoming weekend as well. So if you used all of your bullets with your significant other, putting in time, watching sporting events this weekend, next weekend will probably be even more difficult to avoid. Because this weekend was huge. You had Raptors, Rockets on Friday night, Leafs, Pens on Saturday, and Tiger was doing what he's doing. Next weekend, you've got the Habs in town. I know that there are a tire fire this season, but it's still the biggest rivalry. Still a magical night for Leaf fans, and I would guess for Habs fans as well. Toronto, Montreal, Saturday night. Oklahoma City is in town playing the Raptors on Sunday. That's a big game. Big star power at the very least. Tigers playing, and March Madness kicks off this weekend. So what are you doing?
Kicks off Thursday.
Thursday night, you're right.
Thursday.
Well, actually, I guess Tuesday night with the two play-in games.
Oh, yeah, with the play-in games, right?
But no one even recognizes those, myself included. I don't care about the play-in games.
You know what? Like, instead of just saying, well, you know what it is? It's a couple more games. It's a couple more ticket sales, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also the committee saying, oh, we can't make a decision. Make a decision.
Right.
Get it to 64 teams.
Exactly. Stick to 64 and get on with it.
But Thursday at noon.
I'll be there.
Oh, yeah.
Brackets ready.
I love it.
I love it. It's outstanding because you have no idea what you're actually doing, but you immediately become an expert based on the one article you read in the bracket you filled out.
Murray State.
Love them.
You know, like you read one thing and you're like, they're the sleeper this year.
Davidson's going to win.
Yeah.
Davidson's going to beat Kentucky in the first round based on what?
And then you get to brag after. Called it.
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting when you were talking to Dwayne Casey, you know, and going with his Wildcats, he talked about skill. But the one thing in a one-game setup, you know, is that, you know, you can level the playing field with effort and get on a run and disrupt the other opponent. And we're not talking 1-16. We're talking 5-12. And that can, there's a lot more, they're a lot closer than 5-12.
Absolutely they are. And they've probably never played each other before. Yeah. There's no familiarity at all. 1-16's never happened. Like a one seed's never lost.
Never,
but you're right. You get further down, they get closer together. Anything can happen.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the beauty of it. Darren Dreger will join us, our hockey insider in studio around 6:25. See this crazy story over in Greece over the weekend where the owner stormed the field with a gun in his holster? It was the second time he had charged the field in the same game. First time he went out, he had a trench coat. Which is even crazier for some reason.
So let me ask you this. Like, would that owner be considered to be involved, hands-on?
I would think so. That's the Jerry Jones of Greece football. And the league has just been shut down. They're like, we can't deal with these kind of lunatics anymore.
Well, how can you? I mean, the guy's coming on the field with a gun. Like,
right.
I mean, think about it.
Absolutely. And I guess the police have gotten involved now. And they're like, okay, we got to look into this because you can't be running on the field with a gun inciting a mob.
Oh.
But I guess this has been an issue that has permeated the league to the point where the officials have finally said, I'm done. And I was reading about it earlier this morning. Puts into perspective our fan base collectively in North America. We're crazy. We have fun. We tailgate. We yell and scream. We get overly emotional. We're not lunatics for the most part. Like, lunatic behavior does not really exist from a fan's perspective.
Could you imagine Mary Lemieux coming down on the ice on Saturday night after the goaltender interference penalty and disallowed goal on Brian Dumoulin and waving around a gun?
With his gun. With his gun. Controversial call late on Friday night. Larry Tannenbaum runs onto the court.
Yeah, Larry. Yeah, not well. Yeah, the owners, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
it's got to be to that level.
That can't be a foul, right? Yeah,
but
it's got to be the owners.
Yeah, I mean that's what I've always said. Like, occasionally a jersey gets thrown on the ice, and everyone's holier than thou, and they're like, "That's so sacrilegious, and how can you do it? It's so disrespectful. It's such a donkey move." It rarely ever happens. Over in Europe, they're storming the field to the point where they're shutting leagues down.
Have you ever come close to getting into a fight at a game?
No, I can't remember ever getting into like an argument with another
fan. Yeah, like, you know, another fan starts chirping you or something like that.
No. I've been in the middle at Fenway Park, right field, Yankees-Red Sox game, where we were behind a bunch of obnoxious Yankee fans and in front of a bunch of obnoxious Red Sox fans, and they were going at it the whole game, and a couple of them were like, let's meet outside, like, whenever you're ready, we'll all walk out. So I was right in the middle with my wife. She was, I don't think we were engaged at that point, just dating. And at that point, I was telling her, I'm like, we got to be ready to either duck or get out of the way, because if these two idiots start going at it, like, we're right in the middle of this. And that was pretty crazy. That's the craziest fan experience that I've been a part of that I can remember anyway.
So, Jonas, I had one when I was in Calgary as the manager. We played a Battle of Alberta, and it was a good game, and the building's full. And in the old Northlands Coliseum, Rexall, you come down the back. You come around the back of the press box and then downstairs. So anyway, it was an overtime game, and the Oilers had won. So, you know, there's a lot of excitement, as there always is in that. But there was these Calgary fans, and this Edmonton fan was just abusive, like just abusing him. It was really, you come down, you're like, "Ooh, this is a," and now this big burly guy with his, could have been his wife, girlfriend, whatever, comes up today. He's in his Oilers jacket, and he tells the guy in the Edmonton Oilers jersey, goes, "Shut up." And the guy goes, "What are you going to do about it?" He hits him.
Did he throw?
He had his one fist was this big, and the guy just kind of goes right up against the wall and crumples. And he turns to the Calgary fans. He goes, "Hey, I'm really sorry you had to put up with that." He goes, "We want to see our team win, but that guy was a jerk." But, like, I mean, you're sitting there going, like, that guy had no, I mean, and he was crumpled sitting there, like, just withering in pain, like, with no response.
The,
like,
security didn't kick them both out?
No, it was at the end of the game.
Okay,
the
game, so they were leaving anyway. Okay.
No, I think the way he was being abusive, I don't think
security wasn't
coming. I don't think, I mean.
Crazy crowds at the Valspar this past weekend. We told you about the ratings in the previous hour. Not quite to the level of the Masters in 2017, but larger and substantially larger than all of the other major tournaments from a year ago. That's the Tiger Effect. And to chat about it, we're joined now by a guy who was at the tournament, senior writer for ESPN. Here is Jason Sobel. What was that experience like for you, Jason?
It was just like the old days. It was Tiger Mania all over again. Perhaps my favorite story from the entire weekend was on Saturday afternoon, I stayed in the media room for the first four holes of Tiger's round, and I went to go cut across to the 15. It's an easy walk. You kind of cut across the practice green, the chipping area, and as I was walking past, there were about five or six players who had finished their rounds, and they were kind of standing around. They weren't practicing. They were standing around with a smile on their face as they were looking over at the course, and you could look at the whole course from there, and there was nobody anywhere on the course, and once you looked at the fourth hole, right where Tiger was playing, it looked like there were about a million people, and I turned to one of the guys and said, "Hey, you guys know where Tiger is right now?" And they just started laughing, and it was just amazing to see the massive amounts of people out there for him.
So, Jason, like, you know, we've talked about the atmosphere and what everybody else was doing. How was it for Tiger?
He seems relaxed. He seems happy, more so than he was in his prime years. I think he's changed. I think maybe having kids, maybe going through all the injuries that he's had, I think he probably has some different priorities right now. He seems like he's having more fun playing the game right now. Perhaps that will change as he starts contending more and maybe gets a little more of that focus and tunnel vision like he had earlier in his career. But for now, he seems to just be enjoying himself. He seems to be tickled with the fact that he's not only back, he's not only playing golf pain-free, but he's playing really, really good golf right now.
Well, and I was thinking about that yesterday. If there would be a part of Tiger Woods, or maybe the old Tiger Woods, that would be put off by the reaction to the fact that he didn't even win the tournament. He only finished a stroke back, and he had a decent round yesterday. He just couldn't really get going. But he played pretty well, and he played very well over the course of all four rounds. But he didn't win it. So this idea that Tiger is officially back, and he should be favored at Augusta, and all these tournaments upcoming, doesn't he have to win first before we can get to that point?
You know, I've always struggled with the is Tiger back question because, quite frankly, I think it's an opinion question. I think that it means something different to everybody. Some people think he's back when he's just playing golf. Some people think he's back when he's playing very good golf and contending again. Some people won't think he's back until he goes and wins the Masters again, and obviously that hasn't happened yet. So it's all a matter of opinion. It depends kind of your take on the situation, but I think it's evident that he's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere soon. He's healthy right now. He's hitting all the shots that he needs to hit. You know, is part of his game looser at times? Sure. Is he missing some fairways with the driver? Absolutely. But let's remember, he didn't ever hit every fairway with his driver and when he was playing his best golf in 2000 and 2002, 2005. And we go back in the archives and start looking at some of the stats. I think we start misremembering a little bit just what Tiger Woods did. We remember all the birdies, and we forget that he hit some errant shots back then as well. So that's going to happen. It's still going to happen. He's not going to win every single week. He probably shouldn't be the favorite right now, even though he is this week at Bay Hill, the 149th-ranked golfer in the world, the favorite in the PGA Tour event. I'm not sure that's ever happened before, but it's happening this week, even with guys like Ricky Fowler, Justin Rose, Jason Day in the field this week.
With Jason Sobel, ESPN senior golf writer, we've been talking about Tiger for years here and the idea of him redeeming himself, and by doing so, he goes out there and he wins on tour and specifically wins majors. And we had this conversation earlier, and I'd be curious to get your take on it as a journalist. When you're writing that redemption piece, are you looking back on the past decade and writing more about him redeeming himself or getting back on track based on his injury past and getting his back all together and the other body parts that have really been beaten down? Or is it the personal life issues and that type of redemption that speaks to you more?
He came back from the personal stuff. He had a couple of years where he really struggled. Remember 2010, 2011, he lost the 2009 PGA Championship. The scandal happened about 3-4 months later. In those next 2 years, he really, really struggled. And you could see the mental side of the game had just it had just gone past him. He could not focus on golf at that point. But let's remember, he won 5 times Player of the Year in 2013. So he's been past that. I don't think that's part of the issue now. I think everything is just about, first of all, getting past that injury. Now, remember, he's gone through swing changes in his career where it's taken him a full year to get over those swing changes. So the fact that he's playing at such a high level right now, so quickly after coming back from that injury, I think that's the important part. And let's remember, I went back and looked at it. October 7th, just 6 months ago, he posted a video to social media with the caption, "Smooth iron shots." And that was a little 50% iron shots. That was sort of the first clearance from the doctor that he could at least swing through a golf ball. And for him to be just playing out here right now, 6 months after that, not let alone playing high-level golf again, I think it's pretty remarkable.
You know, you talk about the swing changes that he's had over the course of his career, but now this has been necessitated by the surgery, the back fusion, the spinal fusion. And listening to the broadcast yesterday, they were talking about how he can't rotate as much, and that's affected. What are the one or two things you've noticed that he's had to do differently in his game, you know, specifically swinging the club, whether it be off the tee or short game or, you know, long irons?
Quite frankly, I'm not sure I see it right now.
Okay.
He had swing speed on a drive on Saturday that was 129 miles an hour, the highest registered swing speed of anybody on the PGA Tour so far this year. There really are no limitations, at least inside the ropes. If there is some sort of limitation, I would tend to think that he's practicing a little bit less. He said he's lifting differently. He's now lifting sort of to activate his muscles as opposed to build up muscles. So he's just trying to get himself in golf shape as opposed to getting just bigger and looking almost like an NFL linebacker. I think that he's sort of past that point and just wants to be healthy and have his body in the right shape for golf. So other than that, though, I'm not sure there's a shot out there necessarily that he's afraid to hit right now. I asked him before the Valspar started what he had worked on during the off week after the Honda, where he finished in 12th place a few weeks ago, and he said he was trying to hit higher trajectory shots. And those who have sort of listened to Tiger over the years and studied Tiger, he's always gone to this pattern of trying to hit shots on the range when he's practicing of, think of it almost like a baseball strike zone, or even like the Brady Bunch, where he's got the nine squares and he's trying to hit to each of those nine targets. He's trying to hit one of those faces. And he told me that he was working on the higher trajectory shots, which I think translates to he's okay with those bottom three squares. He's okay with the middle three squares. Now he's trying to work on those top three squares. And once he gets there and he's able to hit all nine of those different shots and he has all of that in the bag, I just don't know what the limitations would be.
With Jason Sobel of ESPN, he was at the Valspar Championship this weekend, and he's at Bay Hill this upcoming weekend. Patrick Reed, he had himself a chance. I mean, he three-putted on 18, and that cost him a chance at either the tournament or at least a playoff. But one of the sub-stories out of the Tiger weekend was Patrick Reed's attire on Sunday, and he's done this throughout his career. He wears the red shirt on Sunday, black pants, and I get the impression, like, this is somewhat of a story on tour. I mean, you're around these guys all the time. Do players care? Does Tiger care what this guy's wearing, Patrick Reed, on Sunday?
Yeah, Tiger gets a kick out of it. And this is sort of the Tiger effect. And what we're going to see, I don't know if it's the next few months, the next few years, for as long as Tiger remains relevant, is that the guys he's going to go up against on any given Sunday afternoon are guys who grew up watching him and idolizing him. These are guys who, when they were young, watched the 1997 Masters, watched the 2000 U.S. Open. They said, man, I want to be like that guy. I'm going to go to the range and start working so I can be a professional golfer just like Tiger Woods. And that's where Patrick Reed got it from. Earlier in his career, he said, man, I always idolized Tiger. He wears red and black. I'm going to do the same thing. And I was actually surprised at how many people took notice of it yesterday and thought he was sort of trolling Tiger Woods, or he was somehow disrespecting him. No, this is actually paying the ultimate compliment to Tiger Woods, and that he wants to be just like Tiger. And he has kind of glommed onto Tiger during the Ryder Cup and President's Cup when Tiger served as a vice captain over the last couple of years, and they've become friendly. And I don't think there was any animosity whatsoever in what Patrick Reed is doing. That's just what we're going to see now. From Reed's attire to the words spoken by guys like Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, these guys pay him a lot of reverence. They grew up watching him, and again, they just want to get into these fields and get into these Sunday afternoons where they're playing against one of their idols, and I think it's actually pretty cool for this sort of cross-generational talent to all kind of come together at this intersection right now.
Thank you, Jason. Really appreciate it. Enjoy this weekend.
Thanks, Alice.
There's Jason Sobel from ESPN.
Did you hear that, Jonas?
Yeah.
I think the reverence for Tiger Woods. Like, you displayed zero reverence for Tiger Woods yesterday.
Well,
outright disrespectful.
But I was just wondering, what it would be like to work with someone who kind of like adored you? Like, what if there was just some guy, Hayes, who was like a really like your biggest fan, and he dressed like you, and he followed you around? Wouldn't it be a little weird?
I guess it would be. I mean, I don't know how he would get access to what I was going to wear that day. I mean, that's the thing about Tiger. You know what he's wearing on Sundays.
Should I tell him?
That Dwayne Casey's that guy?
No.
Casey's my biggest fan. Yeah.
But if you and Mike Masters could have won the trivia contest, there's no telling how that could have taken off in terms of, you know, like you guys being idols. There's no telling.
We could have gone on a barnstorming tour.
Yeah, you should have.
It might not even have to have been barnstorming.
You could have been mainstream. You got to win first. I don't have a problem with Patrick Reed wearing that. He's paying homage to Tiger.
Yeah.
Like LeBron wears number 23. No one ever calls him out for that.
Josh Hosang wears 66.
Exactly. He wants to be like Lemieux. What's wrong with that? I've never heard anyone call LeBron out for wearing 23.
No, it's true.
Now,
although he was 6 in Miami.
Kobe took heat because he went to 24 just to like one up Jordan, which was felt a little bit unnecessary maybe. But
do you know the famous line about Brian Lawton who wore 98? They asked him why he wore 98. He said, just a notch below 99. Ooh.
That one stung, huh? Ooh.
Wasn't he the number one pick?
Yeah, he was.
Didn't quite meet expectations. Went 4.
Hey, that reminds me. Can we talk about McDavid for MVP? Or are we going to do that with Dregs?
Well, why don't we get Dregs in here? Because Dregs was tweeting about it as well. Okay. You're making the push, I believe. And I think Dreger is as well.
We were talking about it last week. I've thought more.
Here's what I would say. Okay, whether you're making a push or not, how can you exclude him just because he's on a non-playoff team?
All right, we'll get into it a little bit more. We'll get into the Marner discussion, what's going on with Matthews as well. And Raptors off a really big weekend. We'll touch on them later in the hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. The Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It, and Darren Dreger is in studio. What's happening, Dregs?
Oh, you know, just getting ready for another hard-hitting Ottawa Senators, Florida Panthers game tonight on the network. So,
well, Panthers, they're the real deal right now, right? Yeah. They survived over the weekend. They got another win in overtime, and I don't think they're yet in a playoff spot, but they're right there with Columbus and Jersey.
One point out, and they got games in hand.
You think they're getting in?
I do. I think it's a battle between New Jersey and Columbus as who gets knocked out.
Well, that's at least you got a race. I mean, there really aren't that many races, at least in the East.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, we know who's getting in.
It would be too bad for Taylor Hall and all those who support conversation that he should be in the
MVP
art
race
discussion.
But where do you stand on all this?
Well, I guess I'm new age because I'm okay with the MVP not being on a playoff team. I don't know who fabricated that criteria when. I think that if you're deserving of that award outright, then you should get the award outright. I mean, the reason we're talking about it is somewhat obvious to Connor McDavid and terrible year that the Oilers have had. And, you know, when you have a terrible year like that, can the Hart Trophy go to a player who's on that team? And my argument as well. He at least has to be in that conversation for the Hart. That's what I'm, you know, maybe not as far as I'm willing to go, but when you look at the fact that, you know, 45% of the offense comes off the stick in some way, shape, or form of Connor McDavid, that's a pretty special year. And nobody is naming Peter Chiarelli as executive of the year, right? So why should Connor McDavid pay a price in a year where it's not cut and dried, I don't think. Like Nikita Kucherov, deserving, no question. Evgeny Malkin's having a great year. Nathan MacKinnon at the top of the list. But again, if we're establishing that you have to be a playoff team for these guys to be in the discussion, that doesn't add up to me because you're eliminating McDavid. You're potentially eliminating MacKinnon. I mean, Colorado's in today, but who knows when we have to submit our ballot. And likewise for Taylor Hall and the New Jersey Devils.
Well, like I just don't know why we want to exclude players. And the
I don't think we've had this in hockey before, though, have we?
Well, I don't know, but I mean,
probably not.
Didn't you say it was the 88?
Mario. But like, why do we want to exclude players? Like, I mean, and watching the Edmonton Oilers all this year, there's only one thing that I've come away with continuously. Okay, we know that they've had an awful year and everything, but without McDavid, they would be 31st in the league, and they might have 25 points. That's how significant he is to whatever success or however you want to measure it to their team. That's a valuable player to me.
Yeah.
Well, it's always been arbitrary anyway. I don't have a vote, but I don't think there's nowhere in the rule books does it say the guy has to be on a playoff team.
Does it?
It's just always been an arbitrary interpretation of the rule. You know, I think there's a part of me that feels like they should just take a page out of the CFL's book and say most outstanding player, because when you add value to it, that's where people start overthinking.
Yeah, but they would say that the most outstanding is the Ted Lindsay, right, which the players vote on.
Which McDavid will probably win.
Yeah, but the counter-argument to the most valuable is, too, I agree, the Hart Trophy definition probably needs to be rewritten, because name the last time the most valuable player in the playoffs wasn't a goalie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last 2 years.
Well, but
you're talking about six.
Potentially. You just asked me a question. Yeah. That's all.
No, but okay.
I'm with you in terms of the importance of goaltending. You can make a case every single year that a goalie should be the MVP.
That was my point.
I know.
Formed it in the way of a question, but it just seems like we want to be old school with a major award that I think is screaming for some adjustment.
Well, we had this, and we talked about it last week with Mike Trout. You just need some example that you can point to and say that maybe he should deserve it. Do you know what I mean? Like, Trout was so good that it didn't really matter that he was playing for crap Angels teams. It was like, how can we ignore this?
Right.
And still, 1 year, I think he didn't win it. He
He's missed out a couple of years, but that's because Cabrera had such a spectacular year.
Well, he won the Triple Crown.
Won the Triple Crown, and I believe
is meaningless.
Tigers were, well,
yeah, but the last
sort of,
guy that had done based it was on in 1967.
It means something. It does mean something.
If it meant nothing, then everybody'd be doing it. Yeah.
And the Tigers were a playoff team that year as well, I believe.
Maybe we just needed a McDavid to come along.
I will just say this. There is no better player in the league than Connor McDavid,
and
I don't think it's close.
I agree with you, but we could have given the award out on September 30th.
Well, I'm talking about through his play this year. What he does on a game in, game out basis in terms of generating on his own, largely. No other player in the league does.
He's a spectacular player, and I'm not disputing that. I don't get the sense. In fact, I know he's not. I don't think he's having a transformationally great season. Like, if he was on pace for his first 50-goal season with 130 points and he was lapping the field, I couldn't avoid that. He's not even leading the league in points.
Yeah, but he's in there. He's in that mix.
He's having a great year.
He's 3 points off the league lead when he has no help.
Okay, but still, he's not leading the league in points.
I think he is having a transformational year. I think his season this year is better than the last year when he won the MVP.
Because of
no help and because of everything else he does. I mean, he has the puck on his stick
all the time.
Out of the zone, into the zone, scoring chances, everything he does.
His metrics are outstanding.
Is at the highest level. No player comes close.
If the four of us on this set can agree that he is the best player in the game, is that fair?
Yeah.
How can you be the best player in the game and not the most valuable?
Well, again, because of the position.
Okay, but
look at Cam Talbot. Talbot, I think their MVP. You could have made the argument last year. Talbot was the MVP of that team.
He was.
Look
a
what
big
they are this year because he's
won,
been
for
awful.
Sure.
McDavid's replicated what he did. Cam Talbot hasn't, and they're a bottom five team in the league.
If he's replicated what he did, how come he's not the MVP?
Because again, you look at the importance of getting there. You look at the importance of what they're doing.
How is he responsible?
But you also have to consider that other players around the league are also doing great things.
Yeah,
like McDavid just doesn't have exclusivity over the award for the next 20 years.
No. But nobody's making that point. What we're saying is, and it is because there's no runaway for the Hart this year. There's no runaway. I mean, I look at Evgeny Malkin and what he's done this year. When you look back, the amount of hockey that he and the Pittsburgh Penguins have played over the last how many years?
Yeah.
It is remarkable to me, what he's accomplished. Nathan MacKinnon,
But Dregs, you can look at all those candidates, maybe not MacKinnon, and you could say, well, Malkin's got Crosby. Kucherov, they've got Point, and they've got Hedman, and they've got Vasilevsky. Like, McDavid, it's like you look at his team and
I know.
And Hayes, if you look at even strength scoring, he's way in.
Oh, he's off the charts. His power play point, he's got 11 power play points.
And that's because their power play isn't good.
Yeah. So, I hear you, but you mentioned taking out MacKinnon. Where would Colorado be without MacKinnon?
Yeah, it's a good question.
They'd be in trouble.
And
the New Jersey Devils, where would they be without Taylor Hall?
They'd be in trouble, for sure. You make the case all the way down the...
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. You got to include these other players. I love
For sure.
But other guys have a great years, too.
Absolutely. But you can't exclude Connor McDavid as a contender. Even though some who do vote... I mean, that's the beauty of social media, right? I mean, guys like Steve Simmons and others, God love them. They're willing to acknowledge... why they don't feel McDavid should be, a candidate, right? So you tip your hand in the process a little bit, and that's transparency, and I like it. But it certainly forges the debate.
Well, I vote, and this year I'm going to make my ballot public.
Yeah.
Which I like. For transparency purposes.
Who would you put first right now?
Who would I vote first right now?
For Hart.
Kucherov my three guys right now are Kucherov, Malkin, and McDavid.
Me too, in that order.
See, Malkin's an interesting case, though, because I do think he gets hurt by the guys that are around him. But look at the numbers he's putting up. They're spectacular.
But then you think of, every night. So look at the Leaf game as an example. Babcock uses his best matchup guys, not against Malkin, against Crosby. There's something to that you have to consider, too.
Okay, sure. But again, you just mentioned when it comes to McDavid, nothing else should be considered. You just look at what he's doing and the kind of performance he's putting up.
But you also have to consider who he's matched up against, don't we?
Well, okay, but we're not going to break down 82 game tapes all year.
No.
Malkin gets some difficult competition.
But we know who's getting the top matchups on Edmonton every single night.
Right, for sure.
Malkin's not.
He's getting some of the difficult matchups. What do you think? He's playing against third pairings every single night?
No, but he's going to be playing against second pairings and second lines.
Not every single night. Not the way he's playing right now.
Why did Babcock decide to match him up against Crosby?
Okay, there's one example. You're telling me at any point in this season he hasn't been up against the best line?
Of course he is. He's great.
Okay, so
but I'm
exactly.
just saying, like, we can't ignore Crosby. Crosby should be in the mix, too.
See, I would put Malkin ahead of Sid this
but
year.
Why? Just because he has a few more points?
Yes. And look at, you just mentioned one game. On Saturday night, Malkin was clearly the best player on the ice. Sid was quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It's only one game, but, you know, Malkin's having a great year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of guys having great years.
Yeah.
You know, it's a fun debate. I'm all for it, but I just think McDavid, he's going to get better, which is scary. Like, he's probably, wait till he's 25. He's 20 right now, or 21.
Yeah.
What's he going to be in 4 or 5 years?
We've watched him since he was 14 years of age. What just floors me, that's 7 years. I'm kind of just trying to put that all in perspective.
Right.
And then I'm trying to think, I go, and he just continuously improves. He continuously does things that you go, I've never seen that before. Like, and that's the scary thought about how he's going to impact the game. And if he gets some better players around him, watch out.
Well, and it's not even the forwards.
Yeah.
You know, if they get some puck moving D,
yeah.
somebody can hit him on the fly with a pass. Ooh. You know, that was half their problem. You know, we want to pile on Cam Talbot, and deservedly so. He wasn't good enough. But their defense was in shambles, is in shambles. And not just because of the injuries that, you know, impacted the Oilers' blue line, just individual poor play, right? So they add a piece there, and who knows? I mean, that can make a pretty considered change and improvement to the Edmonton Oilers.
Well, I mean, at the very least, as ugly as it is, you still have McDavid for 8 more years. And he's worth every penny.
Oh. Yeah.
He's worth every single penny. I know it's the biggest contract in cap history in this league, but how can you dispute that that's what you had to pay the guy? And every year you should probably be giving him even more. But luckily for them, he's locked in, you know? So it's on Chiarelli to figure it out from there. With Darren Dreger, our TSN Hockey Insider. As for Toronto with Matthews, not going to play on Wednesday. We can't imagine he plays on Thursday. Do you have a timeline for him in terms of how you feel they're going to play this out? Or
whenever he's ready.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a dismissive answer, but I think you could see that clearly from Babcock's response today. I mean, he, you know, I wasn't at the practice, but Jonas, you were probably there. And, you know, if you're shying away from contact, there's a reason for that, and that's because you don't quite feel ready. So If it takes another week, it takes another 10 days, it takes another 2 weeks, you know, you need him to be as healthy as he can be, you know, for the last half dozen games of the regular season, make sure he gets his legs back, and away you go in the playoffs. So I don't think there's any rush.
Leafs are in a pretty comfortable spot. We know where they're going to be.
Have been for a while.
Yeah, have been for a long time. All right, Dregs, good stuff, man.
Yeah, you bet.
Thanks, Darren.
Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, brought to you by Finance It. Add a payment plan to your tool belt and break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with Finance It. Connor McDavid, up for the MVP. I'm with you. Should be included in the conversation.
And there's some good. I mean, Claude Giroux is a good one. Taylor Hall is a good one. Nathan McKinnon is. I mean, You can even say that Hedman and
Kopitar.
Brad Marchand in the mix.
Yeah,
Marchand. Yeah,
I put Brad Marchand in the mix.
Yeah, I thought he. I don't think he should have been suspended for that over the weekend.
But. Hey, how about Freddie Anderson?
There wasn't even.
Thank you.
There wasn't even a hearing.
Yeah, I know.
It was an accidental collision.
That's the thing is, he's the last guy in the league that deserves the benefit of the doubt, but it was such a fast play. I think it was a greasy little shot.
I ask this to people all the time. Have you watched the Department of Player Safety accidental collision video?
No.
No, I haven't.
No, so go watch it.
I'll find it.
And you'll watch it, and you'll say, accidental collision.
All right.
And what if somebody's coming at you, you're not sure, what's the first thing you do? You put up your hand.
Brace yourself.
That's exactly what you do.
Well, and Duclair hurt his knee, which wasn't
on the fall.
Right, exactly.
And the Department of Player Safety, the first thing they look at is the act. Then if they deem that there's something further to that, then they look at the player's history.
I'll find that on YouTube. Thanks, Greg.
NHL.com. It's right there.
All right, I'll check it out. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine and look back again on a really wild weekend and a busy afternoon. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Listen to Overdrive every weekday for the Upper Deck Leafs lineup player of the day. And on Friday, call with the names of all 5 players. And this week, you can win a pair of lower bowl seats to see the Leafs take on the Sabres April 2nd down at the ACC. Theme this week, former Leafs who played in the 99 Toronto-Buffalo Eastern Conference Final. Today's Leafs lineup player of the day is Gary Volk. Gary Volk. The Upper Deck Leafs lineup is brought to you by Upper Deck Team Triples, available at ZephyrEpic.com. That 99 Leaf team was nowhere near as talented as this Leaf team, but they made it all the way to the conference final.
I remember Volk would play a bunch with Sundin here and there. That was like part of the conversation that Sundin never had good
wingers. It was the Zach Hyman routine. Like, yeah. That's what it was.
Jonas Hoglund.
Jonas Hoglund. And, yeah. You know, they'd always say, like, he had Stumpy play with them.
And they were good together.
Yeah, they were. They were really good together. That was in 99. It was him and Stumpy Thomas that were.
Yeah.
And, no, Roberts wasn't on the team yet in 99.
No. But, yeah. But he was another left winger who played with them.
I'll tell you what. Stevie Thomas hurt his shoulder that year in the playoffs, and that really hindered the Leafs. That hurt the Leafs. That did. He had a shoulder injury, because the thing about Stevie is you talk about players all in. They were all in for the win. He was all in. Like, you could never push Steve Thomas out of a game. Just couldn't do it.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was game two, and I don't think they had scored a goal through the first two games against Philly. I think it was, and he scored in overtime to win it. Like, Sundin scored late to tie it 1-1 in game two, I think it was, and then he scored in overtime and turned the tide. And
you know what's amazing thing about that though was is Dominik Hasek was hurt.
Right. That was
Dwayne Rolison.
Exactly, Dwayne Rolison that got them to the Cup final. The Leafs had that opportunity. And in 02, they played O's Carolina Hurricanes.
It's amazing.
Which was a great story, but the Leafs were better than Carolina.
But it's amazing, right? Like, when you go back and you look at it and you consider, like, you know, it wasn't even Hasek carrying them through that series.
It's true. No, there's a lot. You can look back on their four conference finals in 93, 94, 99, and 2002. They had opportunities. Not so much in 94. Vancouver beat them up pretty bad.
Yeah.
But, like, in 93, they were up. Late in game six,
So in 94, we swept our series. And then that was the Bure double overtime goal. Went seven games. We're sitting in Dallas. This is going to be. They came in the first game in Dallas, and they just kicked us to the curb. And it was. That series was. We won one game. I think it was just because it went 2-3. They got an extra home game. They just got an extra gate. That's how confident they were. They just annihilated us.
Really?
Annihilated us. We had zero chance, and they went right to game seven.
All the way to game seven, a cup final.
They were good.
Yep. And now Vancouver in a bit of a different position.
Well, I was going to ask you guys, which of those Canadian teams that's disappointed is the most disappointing? Like, how would you rank them? I think it's really Edmonton, to me, sticks out just because we expected them to not just make the playoffs, but be like a cup contender. But, like, some of those other teams, it's been, like,
Edmonton so far ahead is number one for me. It's not even close.
Because of the expectations we placed on them?
I didn't have Montreal or Ottawa in the playoffs. I didn't think they were any good.
I didn't think
Vancouver
was
that
was good. But Montreal, like...
Montreal...
I didn't think they were good, but I didn't think that they were this.
I can't say I thought they were going to plummet to bottom five in the league.
Of course.
And I didn't see that out of Ottawa either, but... Preseason predictions, I had them both out, but like just out. But Edmonton, 104 points a year ago. You got the MVP and McDavid. You signed Dreisaitl. You know, I felt like they were going to make the playoffs again at the very least.
Yeah, I think we all did. I think
we got fooled, because if you looked at that roster, it never looked as good as. Like, I remember doing like preseason prediction kind of stuff and looking at the roster. I'm like, there's not a lot like there after. Those two guys,
yep.
I mean, they have Nugent Hopkins is good, but like the depth of the roster just wasn't as strong.
No, I agree with you, Jonas. And you know, we you look at it and you want to believe, and you know, you realize, wait a sec, we really shouldn't have been believing.
Starting to believe in the Raptors. I mean, that's for sure after the weekend that they just had. And
I believe in the Raptors. I like the way they play. And I know you keep saying pick them with the if they play the Cavs.
Mm-hmm. You think the Raps would be favored for you?
Well, I would favor them.
Yeah. See, I can't.
And I know what LeBron
simply
stands
LeBron.
For. I get it.
It's the respect I have for LeBron. That's what it is.
And I get it, but I would be saying, like, you know what? We're going to go kick his ass.
Yeah. Well, listen, they're going to have home court, and they might meet them in the second round.
I know.
Like, they've dropped down to the four seed, Cleveland.
See, and so now if you ask me, okay, second round, third round. See, I think the second round works more to the favor of the Cavs, because LeBron will not be as tired. He won't be as taxed in the second round as he may be in the third round if he was able to get them there.
Well, I mean, the crazy thing is the way they're playing, as much as I say it's a pick 'em against the Raps, they still got to win in the first round.
I know, that's a good point.
Without LeBron, they're a lottery team. That's a 20-win team.
I watched some of that game last night with the Lakers.
They're awful. They are awful. And it's just, I have more respect for LeBron than any athlete, I think, in the past 15 years. Him and Tom Brady.
And do you know why I was watching the Lakers Cavs last night?
Why is that?
I couldn't find any preseason baseball on at that time.
That's right.
Guys, spring training.
Did you guys see any of that OJ stuff last night on Fox? Did you watch any of the Lost Confessions?
I heard about this stuff. It's bad.
I was watching it, man. It was...
If the glove doesn't fit, you must have quit.
Which is a great line, late Johnny Cochran.
They had to let him try that glove on, though, right?
Yeah, that was the prosecution.
That was the worst
prosecution.
Thing they ever did.
Yeah, like...
So do you know who Vincent Bugliosi is?
No.
He was a famous lawyer. He prosecuted the Charles Manson, all these things. He wrote a book. He wrote a book about it, right? And he just goes through... when you read the book...
Oh, you'll like be even, line by line what they did wrong?
Well, he was a prosecutor, and he just said, like, it was just one disaster after another all the way through. And he said, like...
He got off. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm under the number Vegas Philly tonight, over the number Line A versus Ovechkin in Washington. That's going to be a great game tonight. And Columbus at home over the Habs. Throw down 20 and you can score 80. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. All right, boys, I think we'll see you more times this week, I believe.
Yep. All right. Friday.
Beautiful, Craig.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for today.
Great to see you, Jonas.
Good to see you guys. C, J,
see you, B.
See you, B.
Good seeing you guys. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.